This podcast is brought to you by Watch City Research, your user research partner. Check out watchcityresearch.com for insightful blog posts and to learn more about our UX research services. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the 97 UX Things podcast. Dan Berlin here, your book editor and host. I'm joined this week by Priyama Barua, who wrote the chapter Boost Your Emotional Intelligence to Move from Good to Great UX. Welcome, Priyama.
Hi, Dan. Thank you for having me.
And thanks for joining me. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. Happy to. I work as a VP of Experience Strategy at a company called Merge, based out of Boston. Merge is an integrated marketing agency, part marketing agency, part digital transformation agency. And as experience strategist, what I do is I help our clients use a design-led approach to innovation. What that really means is that we're looking at problems, really large-scale problems, and finding solutions to them that help the company kind of become more future-oriented and informs the strategy of their company.
Gotcha. And how are you going about doing that?
Yeah. It's multifold. So experience strategy utilizes an understanding of what value people see in a product or a service or an organization. Mm-hmm. So by creating value, we are more likely to have that company be relevant in the future. We do a deep understanding of people's experience, so really design research and following the design thinking process.
Yep.
But the outcome is applied in different ways to what we may traditionally think of as in UX.
Yep.
Mostly because it's omni-channel. So we're not just looking at digital interfaces. We're looking at everything. We're looking at, you know, that text message that you get, that piece of paper someone hands to you.
Sure.
The entire experience. So using a service design mindset, really.
Awesome. That's great. Mm-hmm. Thanks for that additional information. Can you tell us a little bit about your career trajectory? How did you find UX and how did you wind up where you are today?
Yeah. I think my path to UX, I would call it a series of fortunate events that happened to me.
Okay.
And me just being receptive to those events and following the direction that I was given. Right from a school friend saying, hey, have you heard of this thing called design? You may be great at it. To, realizing to a moment when I realized I'm not actually good at graphic design and better at strategy and making that shift.
Mm-hmm.
To meeting the person who led me in the path that I am on right now. So just listening to all of that and following my path.
Yeah.
My beginnings was in graphic design, as I mentioned, started to make brands, slowly evolved to making digital interfaces, and then moved here to the US where I met Amy Cueva, now Haymans, who was the co-founder of MadPow, where I worked previously. And she introduced me to this thing called experience strategy that exists. And the first time I heard her talk, I realized there are so many applications of the thing I already do.
Right.
And I was smitten. I was like, this is my path. I just have to follow it.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Mm-hmm. And how about that transition from design to strategy? How did you make that?
So I'm one of those people who's been trained on it. So my first master's was in design management. There I did learn a lot of how to apply design thinking processes to business problems. I learned a lot about business in itself. So being able to put on that hat while thinking about problems was very helpful to me.
Yeah.
More so that I decided to do another master's and get an MBA because I was realizing more and more that the impact that I'm having on organizations is kind of manifesting in operational changes. So
yep.
I went and got a master's in operations. So classically trained, in a sense.
Right, right.
And then I think I picked up a lot on the job. So I worked with Madpow, worked with you for about 5 years. I worked with a lot of Fortune 500 companies that were looking for this kind of work, looking to see how they can shift the experiences and compete on the basis of experience. I started to gain industry expertise by working a lot in healthcare, by working a lot in health insurance, and secondarily also finance. So I realized that having a good knowledge of these highly regulated environments really helped me to become a better strategist.
Yeah, I get that. Having that domain expertise, it's interesting to hear you say about going to get an MBA and that helping with the strategy side of things. This is something that has come up a lot recently, is the tying the interface itself to the business. These are tied. The user interface is tied to the user experience, to the business. And when we change a user interface, we have to keep the business in mind as well as the customer. So it's interesting to hear you were in design first, then got your MBA.
Yeah. And, you know, like I've been thinking this thing lately, and I think others are too, that a lot of the innovation that we could have done is kind of being done. And right now, all the innovation that I see is, you know, how do I take inspiration from this other industry and apply it to mine? I see a lot of UXers thinking that way, but the other thing I'm thinking is that I think a lot of innovation now lies in operations. So if you look at Amazon, that's an example. Someone tells me the example of Amazon almost every day when they're like, we want to be like Amazon. When you see what Amazon has innovated upon, it is not their interface. It's not necessarily their UX. It manifests in the UX, but it manifests, it is really their operations and behind the scenes ability to track in real time via packages, the technical and human manpower that goes into it that has brought about that UX. So if we want to affect change in such large scale and to really move away from status quo, we have to think deeply about how we partner with people that do that behind the scenes innovation.
Yeah, that's super interesting, because you mentioned Amazon and the innovation that they're doing today in shipping and that back end, the technology side of that. It's the same conversation from the 80s when Walmart was doing cross-docking and process innovation. It sounds so familiar. We're having the same conversation, what was it, 40 years later? It's interesting.
It's also like, as experienced strategists, we come head to head with culture of organizations. We come head to head with people within large organizations that are trying to make these changes, that are trying to move the needle, but are up against so many factors that prevent them from doing so.
Right. And corporate factors, I presume.
Yes, corporate factors, leadership. No one having the ability to make a decision. Everyone's waiting around for a decision to be made. And to contrast that, I actually had a chance. I'm going to sound like an Amazon fan, but forgive me here. But last year, I was working with one of our clients in health insurance. And at that time, we were looking to create a partnership where during COVID, our client would be able to ship food to their members that were vulnerable, that were old, that couldn't go out to grocery stores. And, you know, there was a lot to be done there. So we had this idea that what if we partnered with Amazon so they can kind of set these people up with Amazon Fresh, which also accepts EBD stamps and get food in their homes. And I was working as kind of like a liaison between Amazon and our client. And watching all of this unfold, watching how long it took our client to come to reach a simple decision, and watching the Amazon side of this fold out, that there was so much power that was just granted to people to take ownership and make decisions and just do the thing. It was just very interesting to watch that dynamic.
Two very different corporate cultures interacting and not meshing well, it sounds like, perhaps.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you for all of that. Really interesting stuff. The transition to from design to experience strategy and the world surrounding that. So thanks for that. Your chapter, Boost Your Emotional Intelligence to Move from Good to Great UX. Can you tell us about that, please?
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe I'll start with telling you about why I wrote it and why that spoke to me. It's I grew very rapidly in the 5 years that I worked here in the U.S. I moved here 7 years ago, and two of those years I was getting my first master's, and I essentially started from the beginning. I was running my own company back in India, and I was teaching at an institute, and I moved here, and I started up again as an intern. So it was a lot of learning and relearning for me. And as I was growing, I realized I had missed an education of how you work in large teams, in organizations, how you work in multidisciplinary environments, just because I had my own firm.
Right, right.
And I started observing my own interactions with other people and what I'm good at and what I'm not good at. I have to be forgiving of myself also that, you know, I was getting accustomed to a new culture and a new way of working. Everyone was very supportive, but I realized that there were many instances where I could have done something or said something differently. Compounded by the fact that I was a foreigner, I am a foreigner, I am a brown person in a very, very white industry, and didn't always get the good end of the stick in interactions, and I had to be the bigger person in a lot of situations.
Yeah.
So I started thinking about emotional intelligence. I started reading about it. I started observing myself more closely. I started talking to my manager, my mentor about it, and seeing what do I do well. So there are, I'm gonna borrow this term, all of this terminology, from Daniel Goleman, who's a leading expert on this topic. So he wrote in this HBR article that there are four domains of emotional intelligence. They are self-awareness, the ability to manage your own emotional self-awareness. Secondly, there is self-management. So how do you react in a multitude of situations? Thirdly, there's social awareness. So how well can you empathize with others? How well are you attuned to organizations and the dynamics within it? And lastly, relationship management. So the ability to influence other people positively, hopefully.
Yep.
The ability to coach and mentor others, to work in a team effectively, to inspire others. And lastly, one which is very overlooked in emotional intelligence, conflict management. So knowing when a conflict is needed and to manage it appropriately. So my chapter is about applying these competencies very strongly in design and why this is more important today than it was ever before. As you know, we've kind of transitioned from, you know, sitting in front of a computer, doing our designs, taking it to someone, you know, having them move everything around, destroying your designs and launching it, to now a more democratized process. We workshop with people, we get stakeholder input at different points, Like I talked about earlier, if you're really trying to move the needle of something, we're working with those operational people to figure out how is it going to work on their end. There are so many conversations. There are so many voices that we come up against that don't believe in what we are doing, that we have to convince. Mm-hmm. And as you continue to grow, there becomes an aspect of mentoring others, an aspect of coaching others. More and more people want to get into UX. Client management, being able to talk to them in a way that, you know, takes in their perspective, but also prevents them from making a very big mistake.
Right.
All of that has become more important than ever more before. And I think that to a large extent, a lot of people have a narrow understanding of what is emotional intelligence.
Yep.
A lot of people think it means being a nice guy, being a nice person,
yep.
getting along with everyone. It's really not. It is part of it. It is the ability to manage conversations and interactions in a way that, you know, even if someone else is clearly not in control of their emotions, mm-hmm. Being the voice of reason. But it is, like I said, the ability to think about, oh, I want to do this thing. Maybe I need to go talk to this other person. Finding those connections that exist when previously unseen.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like I said earlier, the conflicts to be able to kind of create friction when necessary and do it in a manner that people appreciate that you're keeping a lookout for the best outcomes,
mm-hmm.
And not just creating friction for the sake of friction.
Right. Thanks for that. That's a great overview of emotional intelligence. Really interesting and, you know, really important to UX, as you mentioned. We are designing for people, and we have to know those people and empathize with those people, and emotional intelligence is a huge part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And all the other interesting thing that, as you described how EI is defined, it's interesting how the progression goes from the self to the team to the client, mm-hmm. as you progress from those critiques to interacting with others.
Yeah, absolutely. The way we've evolved, I think a lot of the work that I've been doing recently also is that we're working in teams with the client as well now.
Right.
At least as a consultant, that's what I'm seeing, that, you know, it's no longer expert-led, it's participatory.
Mm-hmm.
As more clients get educated in design, they will have a say. They want to be involved. It's kind of like, teach me how to fish. They want to do more on that.
Yep.
So how do you kind of manage that? Okay, you're my client, but you're also a team member and I'm kind of guiding you here. So it's getting more complex.
And along those lines, you mentioned the friction that's necessary. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with that? What are some tips you have for folks in terms of creating the necessary friction to move things forward, but also managing that with folks?
Yeah. I think a lot of the times, I think this is obviously my personal approach.
Sure.
I am a soft-spoken, introverted person. But I am a very strong personality in terms of the opinions that I have on things. So when it comes to emotional intelligence, I have to remind myself that I need to scale back my personality at some times. Hold back. Again, not want to approach this conversation with, we need to do this, but rather ask questions and say, why are we doing it this way?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a better way? And let the group come up with the idea. The one thing I do pride myself on is being an excellent listener. Most of the time, I feel like I don't even come up with the recommendations and the strategy. It's the people that are around me. It's the clients.
Sure.
It's the team. I'm really literally just putting it together in a coherent
yep.
way.
and listening, asking the right questions and yes. actively listening and finding the patterns and threads amongst what you're hearing. Yep.
Yes. Being a good design researcher.
Right. Exactly. And it's interesting you say that. The other note I took here was about emotional intelligence for UX research and how EI is needed for that. Can you tell us a little bit about that? You know, what about EI is so important to UXR?
Yeah. It's a personal story here. Maybe not the entire audience will relate with this, but, you know, about, I think it was 4 years ago, I was interviewing someone. I was still very fresh in interviewing. I was still learning a lot. And the person on the other end of the line, I think this used to actually happen a lot to me. When they would hear my accent, they thought I'm calling from a call center in India. And they somehow, a lot of participants, their demeanor would kind of change. Yep. And, you know, the level of respect they kind of give you, mutual respect, is diminished. So this person, I got a feeling, was going down this route.
Right.
And I am so unhappy about the way I reacted to that situation. I let her take me down that route of feeling bad about myself, of feeling angry that she felt that way. And I know other researchers who may have faced similar things, not necessarily being a person of color or having an accent, but for different reasons, that a participant is just not... maybe just not behaving in a rational manner.
Right.
For whatever reason that may be. So keeping our composure, reminding ourselves that we're here to do research, yeah. we're not taking it personally. And in some places, even, you know, controlling the situation, say it's not okay for you to behave that way with me, but absolutely. Respectfully.
Yeah, it's that self-awareness and interaction with others, awareness that one needs. That's a great, and thank you for sharing that story. I really had no idea about that, but I hate to say self-control, but that's part of it. Is all right. I'm a researcher. I'm gathering data. I only have 1 hour with this participant. There's an element of self-control there.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else? What else about the chapter were you hoping to convey today?
I think there's some in there about, you know, what do I do if I want to work on this? So I think the best advice I can give is start to read more about it to broaden an understanding of what emotional intelligence is. I think the main problem that most people have with this is the emotional self-awareness and self-control. I know I had it. I still do. It's a constant work in progress. And it's very interesting. Once I started reading more about it, I truly understood it. And when I truly understood it, I found that I could change it. I started reading both Daniel Goleman's work, another book called Go Suck a Lemon,
okay.
By Michael Cornwall, in which I understood that our human brain is still wired to the time when we were cavemen, when we had a physical threat on our lives at all times. So if you heard a twig snap or you heard a voice somewhere, your body would go into a hyper awareness mode, and your flight or fright reactions kind of kick in.
Yeah.
What I read is that we've evolved into people that no longer live in that environment, but our brain hasn't evolved beyond it. So when we have an interaction, when someone is just being plain rude with us, our brain, if we are not, you know, attuned to our emotional intelligence, our brain thinks it's a mortal threat on our lives.
Yep.
And it just reacts. It's and I started reading about the amygdala. It's the emotional center, and it kind of takes over the rational center. So for me, just realizing that it's my brain doing this and I have the control if I talk to myself. Mm-hmm. And then I started learning about self-talk and learning about how situations don't control me, I control the situation. Mm. And being able to, I still get mad, I still get unreasonably irrational, but not reacting in a way that I would regret later is what's key here.
Yep. And a big part of it sounds to be self-critique, self-criticism, exactly. Self-introspection. Mm-hmm. And maybe even once you have the emotional intelligence enough to do so, getting mm-hmm. critique from others.
Mm-hmm. And interestingly, a growth mindset is actually one of those competencies of emotional intelligence.
Yep.
Which was a surprise to me as I started learning more about it. So it's almost kind of like a precursor. You want to change, and that's why you start this journey.
Right. Great. So Priyama, this has been wonderful to hear about your chapter. Can you tell us a tip for UXers, whether they are entering the field or have been in the field for a while? Do you have a career tip for folks?
Can it be a motivational tip?
Whatever you like.
So I've been hiring lately. Mm-hmm. And my company, you know, having a diverse set of people working with us is important to it. It's important to me personally. Mm-hmm. And I have been surprised by how few people of color I've found in my field. Mm-hmm. And I am looking. I'm really looking. And I feel that my experiences are not, you know, they're definitely experiences that other people have had in the field of design. I know I've listened to many, conferences and people talking about their personal experiences. So my piece of advice would be to other people of color like me, if you're a foreigner trying to get a visa, just don't... It'll find the place that will appreciate you. Don't stay in an environment that doesn't. You do not have to put up with the kind of anything that makes you feel less about yourself. And, you know, talking about emotional intelligence, it's important to also speak up when you're having negative interactions. And there is so much space in the design world for people of color. I just hope more and more people stick with it and don't feel deflated when you're not able to find opportunities, because there's a lot of people like me who are looking for you.
Yep, absolutely. And thank you for sharing that. And I have heard that time and time again that, you know, people of color are hard to find in the design world.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Priyama, thank you so much for joining me today. Again, Priyama's chapter is Boost Your Emotional Intelligence to Move from Good to Great UX. Thanks for joining me, Priyama.
Thank you.
And this has been the 97 UX Things podcast. Dan Berlin, your host here. Thanks for listening. The 97 UX Things podcast is a companion to the book 97 Things Every UX Practitioner Should Know, published by O'Reilly, and all book royalties go to UX nonprofits. The theme music is Iron Lung by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, and I'm your host and book editor, Dan Berlin. Please remember to find the needs in your community and fill them with your best work. Thanks for listening.